Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Max Jeffrey and I'm joined by Katie Bulls and James Forsyth. So we were treated today to a nearly 12,000 word essay by Keir Starmer, The Road Ahead, with quotes from Raheem Sterling, Mark Carney, and 10 principles that he said the party would follow under his leadership. Katie, what did we learn?
Well, the essay was aimed at trying to set out almost the principles by which Keir Starmer plans to unveil his vision for the country on. I think the fact that this is happening over a year since he became Labour leader almost says as much as the essay did. The fact that we still need to have something to fill in on his vision shows that it has been fairly lacking. I think in terms of the essay, there was some talk it could be 14,000. So I think perhaps the fact it was 12,000 shows that it had been refined or tightened ahead of being published. I think when it comes to what it was talking about, it was very focused on the idea of a contribution society. So the idea that everyone has to give in to get something out, and also looking at security and opportunity. I think those are big themes. It's also interesting the number of times business is mentioned. As I say in this week's politics column, I think there is an effort by Keir Starmer and his team to try and move away from the Corbyn era, where it's seen as very anti-business Labour as a party, and to suggest that they are pro-business, still with caveats in the sense that they are pro-businesses that help people and pro-businesses that treat their staff well. But I think you can see Labour trying to find some ground in being pro-jobs and suggesting that the Tories have not made conditions easy for many businesses to prosper if you look at various things that have happened in the past year or so. Did it set the heather alight? Has it changed the big picture for Keir Starmer? I don't think so, but as ever, there are plenty of people who have been very quick to come out and say, oh, this is empty, this is nothing in it. I think, to be fair, a little bit sympathetic to Keir Starmer and his team, it is one step ahead of the conference with the leader speech into trying to show what he is about. I don't think anyone thinks a 12,000 essay for the Fabian Society is a mass market product that is going to take Labour ahead by 10 points tomorrow in the polls. So the question is, does it answer some of his critics in the party? I think on that the jury's out.
So James, if this is setting the stage for Keir Starmer's conference speech, as Katie says in her politics column this week, Keir's also going in with disappointing local election results, a botched shadow cabinet reshuffle and sliding popularity. What does he need to do in that speech at conference to win people over?
So I don't think this is where Keir Starmer would want to be 18 months into his leadership. He has had a difficult time, but, you know, this will be the first time he's addressed a kind of packed conference hall. You know, he did his first conference speech as Labour leader to an essentially almost empty room. I think Katie is right about this essay. I mean, some of the criticism is unfair. Some of the criticism is, like, you know, what are voters who left Labour at the last election going to think of his essay? Well, I don't think even Keir Starmer thinks that, you know, that they're going to sit down and read his 12,000 words and then decide that they actually, maybe the Labour Party has got something for them. I think the themes he fleshes out, as Katie said, you know, contribution, security, opportunity, are all fairly uncontroversial. I think the more interesting question is he prepared to make some of the bigger policy leaps that follow? You know, for example, should there be higher benefit rates for people who've paid into the system for longer? You know, that would be the contributory society. Obviously, there would be people who would absolutely loathe it because it doesn't sit entirely easily with the principle of universality. But that would be something. Security. Right, the appeal for this for Labour is obvious because you can do two things at once. You can do security in terms of, you know, moving people onto more long term contracts, making it more difficult for people to lose their jobs and the like, and you can also turn it into security as in terms of, you know, the safety of your streets. You know, that you look at the amount of legislation coming out of the Home Office and you can see the government's concerns about crime and how, you know, it could start losing that argument. So you can see the political space where they're looking, but you can't yet see whether he's prepared to take the riskier decisions that would actually give him a bit more definition. I think one of the problems is that when you read his principles, I think quite a few members of the cabinet could read his principles and basically say, I don't disagree with those. And if that can happen, that suggests that his principles are being so broadly defined that it risks in danger of being kind of motherhood and apple pie. And in politics, if everyone can agree with you, no one really intensely agrees with you, if you see what I mean.
And what more can Keir Starmer do then? What sort of risky moves can he do to show himself apart from the Tories?
I think it's one of the things that is difficult. I think, as Katie said, both on this podcast and in her excellent politics column in the magazine this week, one of Keir Starmer's problems is there is a large wing of his party that will criticise everything he does. And I think that is part of his problem, which is that, you know, that he is constantly running against a kind of drumbeat of negativity. But I think, in some ways, he is the author of this misfortune, because it is worth remembering that if you think back to that Labour leadership contest, he essentially ran as a Corbyn continuity candidate in policy terms. You know, the idea was it was going to be Corbynism without the baggage. You read this pamphlet, that is not Corbynism. You look at the changes he wants to make to essentially prevent the heavily Corbynite membership from picking the next leader. And again, you see, you know, this is not the figure he stood as in the leadership contest. So I think he is trying to get to the right place. But the original sin of his leadership, if you like, is the basis and the perspectives on which he won it.
And Katie, going to conference, Starmer also wanted to change the way that the next leader would be elected, away from the one member, one vote, and towards an electoral college system. Where are we now with that? Is it going to be a tense weekend down in Brighton?
Well, negotiations are ongoing when it comes to the various unions, and I think we're hearing that some of the unions are not completely dismissing the idea, but you're at the point of negotiation, so perhaps they're back in favour of something else, perhaps it will be watered down to a degree. So I think there's still a way that it could potentially get through, but those talks are still there. And I think going back to your question to James about what else Keir Starmer can do, I do think that when we're looking at the fight of the Electoral College, and also another thing that we voted on this weekend in terms of the EHRC recommendations on anti-Semitism, bringing them into effect, clearly the hope in the leaders' office is they can win these fights, but it's not the only reason they're fighting them. If they lose them, I think they still get something out of it, because there is a sense that Keir Starmer can define himself not just through his essay and his leader's speech, but by picking a fight for his own party. And I think we're seeing bits of that, but it clearly is high risk in the sense that if you lose the fight, if all the focus is on those on the left who are, you know, critiquing the plans by Keir Starmer, and that gets their attention, you could almost become about Labour infighting or the fact Labour hasn't changed when Keir Starmer's trying to say the opposite.
And moving on to the gas price crisis, Paul Scully today said that the government needs to prepare for the worst. We're seeing small and medium-sized energy companies collapsing. I think 1.5 million customers have been affected so far. James, how much worse is this going to get?
Well, I think it could get quite a bit worse. You know, the wholesale price of gas has gone up fourfold in the last year. And there are no signs of these increases coming to an end. And I think that the danger is that as the price, you know, more and more of these energy companies go bust, and then you combine that with the other supply chain shortages that you have at the moment, and the government begins to have some real problems. Now, I think ministers are fairly confident that the UK is not going to run out of gas, but one thing that I think is clear, and you see this in Andrew Bailey, the Governor of Bank of England's letter today following the inflation numbers, is that these higher energy prices are going to lead to higher inflation for longer. And one of the big things that big questions there is, you know, but how long can the Bank of England say, as it currently does, that its view is that its inflation in the system is transitory? If it is forced to come to the conclusion that this inflation is not just transitory, you then get the whole question of whether the Bank of England is going to have to raise interest rates. And it is worth remembering that one of the things, you know, people who have a mortgage, you know, the bank rate has not been above 1% for more than a decade. It has been below that for a decade. If you saw mortgages rates going up, people aren't used to that. And that, you know, that can have quite a dramatic effect. So you add that to the reduction in universal credit and the national insurance rise coming in next April, and you can quite quickly see how we get to a cost of living crisis.
Katie, Boris Johnson has been in the US meeting with Joe Biden, speaking at the UN General Assembly over the last few days. We haven't heard much in the way of a proper response from the government. Should we expect some sort of intervention over the next few days?
We've heard the government say that they are sticking with the energy price cap, and also moving to bailout in terms of some of the production companies. I think we're going to see more calls from energy companies for funding, for bailouts. And I think it'll be interesting to see if the government moves on that or waits longer. I think, just to put another plug in, I think we have Martin Lewis on Spectator TV this week, and he is very interesting, explaining why no matter what the government does, consumers are going to pay for this, the energy price cap will go up, it might stay in place, it's still going to go up. And ultimately, there's a question under the current trajectory as to whether the government could decide not to bail out these small and medium companies, but if this problem is here for the foreseeable, eventually that could, as these bigger companies have to absorb new customers, it could become a bigger problem for the big companies, at which point the bailouts could come, because you have to have some companies functioning and you could be feeding a monopoly. So I think there are tricky decisions for the government depending how long lasting this problem is. And while Boris Johnson has been talking about how it's temporary, I do think there are ministers concerned that it temporary is will be for a longer period than many are comfortable with.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And if you want to watch that episode of Spectator TV, go to www.spectator.co.uk/TV.